Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Gamefly.com. Gamefly has over 8,000 new releases and classic available games to rent from Xbox One, Xbox 360, PS4, PS3, PS Vita, Wii, Wii U, and 3DS, as well as the older systems. Now, as a Gamefly member, I can tell you that it's the easiest way to rent consoles or handheld games that you want delivered right to your mailbox for one low monthly fee. Gamefly also offers the ability to rent Blu-ray and DVD movies as a part of the regular service at no extra charge. If you want to start renting your games and movies the best way possible, go to Gamefly.com right now and sign up for a premium 30-day free trial. One game out specifically for viewers at the following URL, GameflyOffer.com/ALN, and get a free 30-day trial with Gamefly.com. All right? There's a lot of games out there, so why don't you make your life better and play them? And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody. Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. How are you? You guys doing good? Yeah. Hope you had a great week. Had a good week so far. Brad and I are in Vegas tonight through Saturday at the Crapshoot Comedy Festival. Pretty fucking pumped. First time festival, first time being there. All the comics flew in on a private jet. It was the shit. Brad and I both got shows tonight, Friday, and then Saturday doing the live ALN at the El Cortez Hotel and Casino with guests Ryan Sickler, Chris Porter, and Beth Stelling. So come out and see us. Tickets at crapshootcomedyfestival.com. Man, today's episode, such a funny episode. You know this guy from Silicon Valley. You know him from Arsenio Hall. You know him from his dramatic work in the film Patriot's Day. He is just a hilarious dude. His story is interesting as shit. And he's one of the funniest dudes to be around. I've had the pleasure of kicking it with him at some pretty star-studded parties. And we get into that as well as his journey from Hong Kong to America. Adapting to the cultures out here and learning the language, and then how he got into comedy and his experience on Silicon Valley. It's all hilarious. It's all awesome. And it's all from Jimmy O. Yang. Yeah, baby. Man, so funny. Talk about a naturally funny dude. That's Jimmy in a nutshell. Aside from being a great actor, he does stand-up, so go see him live. Follow him on Twitter at FunnyAsianDude. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, at ALN Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Thank you for watching a brand new episode of Return of the Mac last night. Just a few episodes left, and you guys appreciate all the tweets and support. Really, it's really been fun to watch the show. I think they did a great job, and hopefully we get to do it again. Like I said, tour dates, Brad and I in Vegas this weekend, and then next week I go to Reno. Oh, next week, actually, I'm in Brea with Brad at the Brea Improv, May 26th, 7th, and 8th. And then May 30th through June 4th, I'm in Reno at the Laugh Factory with Sandy Danto and Rachel O'Brien. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. That's May 30th through June 4th, Reno, Laugh Factory. All my tour dates at AdamRayTV.com. All of Brad's at BradWilliamsComedy.com. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for all your ALN merch. Buy it. Bring it to the shows. And subscribe and rate and comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. We appreciate all the love and support. Speaking of comments, I said I would read some. From Fun Incarnate. That's his name. By The Lost Carol. He says, About Last Night is a great comedy podcast where comedians Brad Williams and Adam Ray interview fellow stand-up comics and other celebrities. Adam and Brad do a great job getting the guests to open up and help the listeners get to know them. A lot of laughs to help you get through the day. Thank you so much, Fun Incarnate. I love that. 5-star rating. You're the man. From So Much Funny by P. Moores. First pod I ever subscribed to, and I've been laughing ever since. You two have turned me on to so many comics and other pods, but I always look forward to yours. Can't wait until you come back to Minneapolis. Thank you so much, dude. Gave it that 5-star rating, too. You the fucking man, dog. Still Amazing by Whamick says, I've been listening to the podcast since the beginning. Such a great organic show. There's such a sincerity and hilarity in their interviews. Some episodes should be required listening for people who grew up in the 80s and 90s. I agree, dude. Thank you for the 5-star rating and the comment. Guys, take a second, leave a comment and 5-star rating on the podcast iTunes page. And we'll read yours on the intro. All right. Now that we got the Twitter handles out of the way, the iTunes reviews, the merch info, the tour dates, the Joey Mac Wednesday nights 8:30 on Pop TV info. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with a very funny Jimmy O Yang.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Wait, you were shooting Crazy Rich Asians?
Yeah, it's based on a book. It's this movie, All Asian Cast.
Fuck
one
yeah.
One of the first, like, studio films, All Asian.
Now, I was just going to say that.
Shooting, like, with a camera, right? You weren't just out, like, shooting Crazy Rich Asians.
I wish.
You have to ask.
Human beings, the most dangerous prey. Coming to theater.
And we have you on sort of a crazy day for you, because I just told you, your app... Not Hot Dog is trending not only on Twitter but in the App Store.
In the App Store, it's the 1, 2, 3, like the sixth app in the App Store that's trending.
Yeah.
Which, and
for the people who aren't familiar with the amazing show Silicon Valley, first of all, shame on you. Secondly, you guys create an app in the show called Not Hot Dog.
Yeah.
Where it just takes pictures of something, and then it tells you if that object is a hot dog or not a hot dog.
That's all it does.
That's all it does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
So you can take a picture of anything, and it just says, oh, like they're the most useless app ever, but at the same time, fun.
But also, it works. Like, the engineers actually put in a lot of work
and yeah.
trained it, so it works.
Yes.
Pretty high degree of success.
Yeah, some people are trying to fool it. I've seen this where people are drawing pictures of hot dogs.
Right.
And then, like, saying, but then the app still says, like, that's a hot dog.
I'm doing a not hot dog challenge on Twitter to see if you can, any non hot dog object that you can make the app tell you it's a hot dog.
Yeah.
And then we're going to give you some swag.
Wow.
The funny ones.
See,
not all of them.
Right. Because, I mean, you know what? The ice bucket challenge was great for ALS.
ALS.
But now everyone needs to hop on this trend.
This is great for Jimmy O Yang. You know? I don't get a dime from it. But,
yeah.
But it's fun.
It's fun. And who knows? Maybe you can, if you have a dachshund, you can dress him up in a hot dog
costume. People try that.
Yeah.
And some of it worked, some of it didn't. My favorite one is this pug in a Wiener Schnitzel mobile. And then it counted it as a hot dog.
How much did you have to smoke to say the sentence pug in a Wiener Schnitzel mobile?
Oh, came up with that. Look at that. Isn't that the cutest thing?
Oh my God.
And it says it's a hot dog.
Yeah. Or Oscar Myers, not Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah. It's just random, but it's crazy.
I need to cash out with like Oscar Myers or Wiener Schnitzel or something.
You can turn that mic directly towards your face.
Oh, is that how microphones work?
Oh wait, yeah, you can tighten
it
up.
Is there? Oh, there you go. I can do this.
Yeah.
Or but then I'll be looking away from you guys. Is there someone to do that?
Yeah. There you go. Just like that.
But
perfect.
It was okay. Good.
There it is.
Yeah, I think you can tighten it with that silver thing. There you go.
Yeah, man.
Wait. Now, are you a hot dog in real life?
I'm not a hot dog. I tried.
No, I mean,
I tried. I took a picture of myself. I'm not a hot dog.
Because I think it was, not to just go from Asian to Asian here, but like, is it Kobayashi?
Kobayashi, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, look, is he like the Michael Jordan for you guys? Or
I don't know about us, but maybe Japanese people.
Yeah.
Not really. My dad hasn't claimed them yet.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
Is that your barometer for...
My dad claims people, because my dad's from Shanghai. He's very proud of that.
Yeah.
And he claims every successful athlete, actor as Shanghainese. At some point, Yao Ming was legit from Shanghai.
Dude, Yao Ming was a fucking god. Like, I mean, I loved how, just as a basketball fan, it was like cool to see a guy that tall be that dominant and that fast and that and then play that long. I mean, the fact that he had foot problems when he did, I was like, dude, I'm surprised he got 10 years out of that
exactly.
career.
Right. He's a giant.
And he really opened the floodgates for basketball in China.
Yeah.
Well, because then that's one of the reasons why it was so amazing, because then he sort of brought the NBA
mm-hmm.
over there. It was kind of like the dream team followed by Yao Ming, and then Yao Ming just blew the fucking roof off.
Exactly. Like my dad and all my uncles got like the league pass and everything. They were already kind of basketball fans, but this was just a whole nother thing.
So it was a direct like spike.
Oh, yeah. My dad is still a Rockets fan because of Yao Ming.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it? Did you ever go to China when he was like playing?
And I didn't. No. I think I might have seen a couple games. Now, I've been a big Clippers fan, but when Yao Ming was in the league, I was a Rockets fan.
Because you've been in the United States for how long now?
So I came here when I was 13. I'm going on 30 now, almost. So I'm 17 years.
Just like the movie. Years. Just like the Jennifer Garner movie.
Oh, yeah, 13 going on 30.
That was based on your life, by the way.
Whoa.
You don't know that. I don't want you to sue the studio, but yeah. They heard that you were eventually going to be 30, and you were 13 when you moved.
Yeah.
And they go, who's the white Jimmy O Yang? Jennifer Garner.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was that about? It was her.
It was sort of like a Freaky Friday thing where she's 13, and then all of a sudden she gets morphed into a 30-year-old.
And that's why I love Brad Williams, because who the fuck knows that synopsis?
I mean, I can give you the synopsis. I mean, if there was a Jennifer Garner movie synopsis app called, like, Jennifer Garner, not Jennifer Garner, I could do that. I could just be like, you can, like, show a picture of a sword and be like, was this part of a Jennifer Garner movie? I'd be like, no, she played Elektra that had a psi, not technically a sword.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Boom.
Jennifer Lawrence Dictionary. Not Lawrence, Garner. Yeah, Garner. Excuse me.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jen out there.
Well, I mean, you know what? I'm going to forgive you for that because English is your fourth language.
Well, yeah, if you count all the dialects in Chinese, then it would be the fourth spoken language.
Wow. So you got here when you were 13.
Yeah.
And first impressions of the States?
It was big and different, man. Like, the food was different. In Hong Kong, there's a lot of foot traffic. You just take public transport, much like New York. Mm-hmm. With L.A., if you don't have a car, you can't go anywhere.
Right.
One of the first days.
And this is, like, before Uber, so it was...
Oh, yeah, way before. And, like, one of the first days, my grandpa was already living here. One of the first days I was in America, he took us to his favorite American restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we walked 45 minutes down La Cienega. I was like, what the fuck? You know, he thought it was closer because usually he drives a car. But we're used to walking. So me and my dad and my grandfather, like three generations of Asian, walking down La Cienega to his favorite American restaurant. And finally we got there. It was an El Pollo Loco.
You know what, though? But when you don't know.
Oh, it was delicious.
Yeah. I mean, it's good food.
Yeah, but I didn't know like what, like you can choose dark meat, white meat, corn tortilla, flour tortilla. That wasn't an option.
That was overwhelming.
Yeah. Very overwhelming.
I mean, Subway's got to blow your fucking mind when you first go in there.
Absolutely,
you're like,
man.
19 different types of breads.
Everything is
50 like, meats that aren't even meat.
Yeah. Pizza Hut is like a legit restaurant in China.
Yeah.
Like a sit-down restaurant.
When I went to China to do some shows there, I was in the airport in Shanghai, and I walked into a Pizza Hut, and it's like a sit-down. You get a napkin. You get some nice silverware. Like, it's like a nice... Like, in China, if some guy goes to a girl like, hey, I'm taking you to Pizza Hut tonight, that girl's fucking him. Like,
she's
that's...
fucking.
Yeah.
The Pizza Hut is like the magic castle of that's, China.
It's just God. Like, you are putting out that night. It's a classy place
in
China.
I don't want to question greatness, but I mean, was it always like that? Or did some... Was there a commercial with like some celebrity? Like, did David Beckham come over and be like, "I always like Pizza Hut," and everyone was like, "Now we do too."
I think it's when okay, so when Americans or Western people when they say let's go hang out, we go drink. Mm-hmm. I'm saying we for both now.
Yeah,
yeah. No,
and then when Asian people when we say let's go out, we go eat. So eating and going out eating is a big activity. So that's why I think Pizza Hut is more of a restaurant than a delivery place. I mean, they deliver also. But you can straight up get like a souffle and like a seafood pasta. There's a salad bar like Sizzlers, but like much better.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. It's insane. And as someone from the States, you go over there and it just blows your mind.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
It's delicious, too.
Yeah. And then...
did people tell you, like when you got here, did you have anybody like other relatives or friends that just to give you some sort of like lay of the land or tour guide you a little bit to be
well,
like,
my tour guides were my grandparents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're old. And they're Chinese, way more Chinese than I am.
And I'm guessing not like super tapped into like what's hip and cool out here.
Like they know like the good Chinese restaurants in Chinatown or the West Side or something like that.
Like they weren't like, let's go to Jumbo's Clown Room on a Tuesday night.
No, I did not have a guy like that. I wish I knew you.
Yeah.
You know? I would have been going to Jumbo's Clown Room when I was in eighth grade.
And for those not in Los Angeles, Jumbo's Clown Room, maybe one of the more demented strip clubs.
Yay.
Demented.
I will say
but
this.
It's fun.
It's burlesque.
Yeah.
And like, and it's a really intimate bar with the stage for the dancing. And I will say this. Those dancers work fucking real hard. Harder than like...
Real strippers.
Yes.
So yeah, you got
and,
moves.
Yeah. And yeah. they're physically some of the shit they do, I'm like, are you sure you shouldn't be playing professional soccer?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you just bent your leg / vagina in a way that I think could stop a lot of penalty kicks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those girls are amazing. I used to go there a good amount because I used to live right down the street in Little Armenia.
Oh, nice.
For those who don't know, Thai Town and Little Armenia is right next to each other. And so Jumbo's Clown Room's in there.
So you didn't live in Chinatown. You lived in between two cultures that aren't huge fans of the Chinese.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Do they have beef with the Chinese?
Do they have beef? I mean, no, they have like mushu pork. They have like a lot of things.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Hey, that's my best joke. I'm out.
Rich.
Yeah, so.
Your grandparents gave you a little. They at least went out of their way
tried.
To take you. Yeah,
yeah, they tried. My cousin lived here. They were born in America. So maybe, I don't know if they took me around. I really had to navigate my own way, you know, in eighth grade and then going to high school here.
How was high school here?
It was cool. My dad used a fake address and I went to Beverly Hills High. So it was Beverly Hills High. It's a lot of foreign kids, a lot of, you know, Persian
Very
kids.
Very diverse.
Jewish kids that were born in America, it's raised in a different cultural, with a different cultural value. So. Sure. It's almost like I'm more comfortable to outsiders, you know, and it was cool. And some of my best friends are still Persian.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. They're still Persian?
Still Persian. They didn't change. They didn't change. Some of them, when they're 18, they become Mexican.
There's a lot of pre...
that's, you know...
Yeah, knowing somebody pre-Persian is like, I feel real special. I love in your set on Arsenio Hall that you talked about...
Oh, yeah.
...adapting to like the verbiage of, you know, cool, hip America.
Right.
And not really knowing how to... I guess, were you saying that your English wasn't good at that point?
I mean, I didn't really
just trying
know
to pick up what
too much English. I learned it on paper.
Right.
Like how kids here would learn Spanish.
Okay.
But I never really had a conversation in English. So, well, at first, I just didn't know what's going on at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like the slangs, what's up? I didn't know what that meant.
Was it so, did it make you so apprehensive to even like have conversations? Because you're like, I don't want to seem real. Or were you just like,
I guess
look.
I was much younger. I was 13, so I didn't know better. And I was always kind of able to be funny just so I didn't get bullied.
No shit.
And then...
What would you do?
I just try to be a funny kid. Like, I try to, even though I didn't understand too much English, I would, like, try to joke around or whatever. And I was fairly athletic for my size, so I didn't really get my ass kicked or anything. But, I learned a lot of English by watching TV.
You said Snoop Dogg in the set, which was
Snoop
hilarious.
Snoop Dogg and... BET Rap City Comic View. When I saw first of all, I didn't know what stand up was because there wasn't a thing.
Stand up isn't really like there's is there like Chinese
it's becoming kind of like a niche thing,
right? I mean,
but back then when I was growing up,
or
when my dad was growing up, it was just a two act. That was a thing, like almost a sketch live show with two people.
Oh, okay.
When they do some canned routines to a rhythm, but stand up is not a thing. And so when I saw Comic View, first of all, I don't understand a word those guys are saying.
Yeah.
And the accents they're saying it in, and also the slangs. It's very street, you know.
Right.
So I thought, if I can understand this, I can understand anything. So I really started watching that, and I found it very interesting and funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, to this day, when I watch Bernie Mac's set from Def Comedy Jam.
Oh, I love it.
I have no idea what that guy's saying either, but his timing is just so fucking good that I'm cracking up the entire time. So, yeah, you learned an advanced form of English that I didn't know.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So you could have talked more street than me at that point.
True. I was like a Chinese guy with a street accent.
What were some of the first like words and things you learned that you were like, okay, cool, this is, I feel like,
well, it's
what
also, it's
like
also,
in conversations that you felt comfortable in? Like, how long did it take for you to go, all right, cool, now I feel like my English is on par enough?
They're putting me in those ESL classes for like 2 years. So in eighth grade, I was really just kind of like, sorry, I'm eating gummy bears. It was a trap. There's a bowl of gummy bears.
Adam has put a bowl of gummy bears in the apartment, that's going to be gone by the end of this podcast.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I did it two other times, and then today I was just like, you know what? Jimmy seems like a gummy bear guy.
I am a gummy bear guy.
Wow.
We're going to make not hot dog gummy bears. Seriously, that's part of swag.
Holy
really?
Shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'll bring some.
I love how they're really, and we'll definitely go into this later, but I love how they're really like focusing more on your character this season.
I'm stoked about it, and that's great.
You're so good on the show, dude.
Thank you, man.
How did that come about? Because the show was a hit already, right, when you joined?
Not really. It was first season.
Okay.
So it was already a show. I was like, oh, Mike Judge with all these great comedians.
Dude, come on.
Yeah.
Everyone knew. It was like HBO, Mike Judge, that cast.
It's like, let's hope it's a big deal and let's hope it gets a second season. But I joined first season just as a guest star.
Yeah.
Or even a co-star, like 2-3 lines for like 3 episodes, I think.
Yeah. And your character was kind of in and out, would say like a sentence. And then literally, TJ Miller would yell at him.
The whole first season, I think I had like 5 words, maybe.
Yeah.
And in 3 episodes, I got paid like, I don't know, the day rate, like $3,000.
Yeah.
And it would just always end with TJ Miller going, Jin Yang!
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Still, till today.
Yeah.
So then second season, I had an offer to do a Yahoo series.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahoo was like, look, if you do our series, you can't do other premium platforms or online content.
Sometimes.
Which means HBO.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dude, I don't, what the fuck, dude? Like, and Yahoo's not planning to pay me a lot. And I'm like, it's Yahoo. That was like the first time trying to do a couple of series.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dude, what are we going to do? And then my agent was smart enough to ask HBO. I was like, look, Yahoo's offering him like a series regular. Would you guys match the offer? I thought she was crazy at the time, but I guess they had some plans for my character to expand. And they're like, we can't let this guy go. So they signed me up on season 2, and I've been here ever since.
Oh, my God.
Right? Isn't there that crazy?
Isn't that crazy, dude?
American dream.
How many auditions had you been on until you booked that?
For Silicon Valley?
Just in Hollywood. Like,
I have an audition log. I think it's about the 114th audition.
Wow.
Yeah.
That still doesn't sound like very many.
I know.
I've been on thousands.
I know.
And not gotten thousands.
Yeah.
So and that's like, I mean, that's still a lot.
If you get 1 out of 50, that's good, honestly.
Fuck yeah, dude. Oh, that's huge. And I just want people that either are just starting out in the business or not in the business to just take that into consideration. That's 113 times. And like we say, that's low.
Mm-hmm.
113 times walking in thinking, all right, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing. And then maybe you get a call back, but just hearing no that many times, and yet you still go back.
But it just takes that one thing, man.
And, it really does.
Yeah.
When I auditioned for it, it's such a small part. It was the casting associate at the time. I think she's a casting director now, Leslie Wu.
Who's my girl?
Yeah, at Gene McCarthy's.
You know,
office.
I worked there?
Oh, yeah?
I interned at Gene McCarthy for 5 years. Dude.
No way. So that's
Jeannie,
a great office.
Nicole, I mean, I literally started out doing just office work and then became, I was running sessions, and then it became the guy I was reading for like the director sessions for, you know,
that's
like
great.
For Getting Rid of the Greek and for Getting Sarah Marshall. I went with Jason Segel and Russell Brand to San Diego to put Kristen Bell on tape for Forgetting Sarah Marshall because she was doing Veronica Mars down there. They're the shit, though. I mean, Nicole and Wu are...
They're
so
great.
Wu and I were interns together when we started, and now she's like a baller there, you know?
Yeah, so she was a casting associate three, 4 years ago. And the casting director, Jeannie McCarthy, wasn't even there when I auditioned for my role. It was just on tape. I did it one take. That's it, because it's such a small role.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, it turned into this.
Dude, that is crazy.
Know, right?
That's what happened with Jaleel White on Family Matters. Small-ass role. He crushed it, and they were like...
Yeah, and Urkel, I heard. Like, he was just a guest star, and then, you know...
Yeah, that's Jaleel White's the guy that played Urkel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
That's
he just was on Silicon?
No.
Oh, you were just
Haley Joel Osment is on Silicon.
You were just saying the story I just said.
Yeah.
But you said Urkel instead.
Wait. Haley Joel Osment is gonna make an appearance?
Yeah.
He's
gonna be in a few.
I'm intrigued.
Is he gonna see IC Tech people?
He's in the trailer. He's in the season trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a great actor.
I mean, I'm sure you can't reveal too much about his part.
I can't talk about his part, but he's in it.
But he's in it. That's all you need to know. And if you've seen, if you watched him in the Entourage movie, it was great. Like, he's, to say he's a great actor, it's like, yeah, of course. He's been in so much great stuff.
And a lot of times he's playing himself, but this, he's not.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited to see it.
I want to know, like, when you get here at age 13, when does stand-up even enter your realm of consciousness? Like, when are you even aware about it?
It was literally like Comic View. It was funny.
Learning English.
Yeah, I watched Comic View. I watched Kings of Comedy. I thought that was so funny. I still have the Kings of Comedy DVD.
Nice.
But when I watched like Comedy Central, those half hour, I never found them funny. I can never sit through one of them. It's too heady in a way, right? Whereas the urban comedy is much more just funny and entertaining.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I always gravitated towards that, and never really thought that would be a thing until I just got bored after in college, about to graduate. I had an econ major. I didn't want to do that. So I was just trying different things, and I took to comedy. Comedy was one of the random things I tried.
Where's the first place you went up?
Ha Ha Comedy Club.
Ha Ha Comedy Club.
NoHo, baby.
Yeah.
$5 for 5 minutes of open mic in front of 5 pissed off comics.
It's a great deal.
And was that something where after your first set, you're like, oh, wow, I like this, or...
You know what? I think I liked it not mainly because of the comedy aspect of it. Like, oh, look, I'm on stage living the dream. Like, yeah. I'm going to be Eddie Murphy one day. It's not that. It's that I finally found an outlet to make some new friends. So it was the hangout. It was meeting the other open micers, expanding my horizon. That was what's exciting for me.
I hear a lot of comics say that as their reason for wanting to get involved. It was like they almost didn't get a little bit out of boredom, but also like feeling the need to like post-college to find a group to attach to.
Exactly. I never was in fraternity. I was still hanging out the same friends from high school playing Madden. I was like, dude, I need...
Are you saying that economics majors aren't the best people to hang out with?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I never went to class. I just got super high because I hated that major. And I
fit in with being a comic just nicely.
I was already living like a comic. I got like a 2.7 GPA or something.
Okay, so it's not like you weren't Dr. Ken and like excelling.
No.
Yeah, this was not. You were not going to be an economics professor or an analyst or anything like that. I just hated it.
Now, what do your parents say when you get a 2.7 GPA?
They didn't know that. They didn't know that until I got on Silicon Valley.
So, are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I never told them.
Things were going okay. You're like, hey, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, look. You know.
I had to get here by
now,
doing this.
How did you hide your report cards from your family?
Well, in college, I guess they just assume I was doing okay.
Yeah, parents don't really check in on the college GPA. Unless there's like obvious signs of debauchery to where they're like, are you even going to class? You know, like if they see pictures of you like taking trips every weekend and they're like, maybe this is becoming a problem.
I guess you're passing.
Yeah, I passed.
2.7 is, that's good enough.
I wouldn't show up to class. I would cram like maybe 2-3 days in front of finals and then just show up and take the final.
And would you crush it?
Not crush it. I got a C, but it's still passing.
Yeah.
Now, were you, was it one of those things too where it was too easy for you and you were just over it?
No, it wasn't. High school was like too easy. I got straight A's, not doing anything. Mm-hmm. Then when I got to college, I actually had to work. I went to UCSD, which is not the easiest school.
No.
And, but I just hated everything about college, going to class. And that school had like really low school spirits. If I went to UCLA or like USC, I feel like I would have had more fun.
Yeah.
I just really wasn't having fun. I was kind of depressed.
Oh, interesting. Now, so you're just looking for an outlet or something.
Yeah.
Now, that had to surprise some people because on a whole, people...
think of San Diego.
Think of San Diego, but also a young Chinese student, and they go, oh, this kid has got to be going... Like, to see you... To your friends, they were like, yo, Jimmy, you're just going to get high and not go to class? Like, isn't this what you love?
Also, right? maybe that's part of it, right? Because in UCSD, there's a lot of these like Chinese students that are just very nerdy and just very stereotypical in that sense.
Sure.
Not that I have a problem with that.
No.
In a university, everybody's like that. A good university.
Yep.
But I want to, in a way, separate myself from those guys. I'm like, I want to be an Asian guy that gets high and gets laid. You know what I mean? So that...
Like, they're studying getting high-paying jobs, but... Yeah. There's really hot women over there.
So I'm trying to be the non-stereotypical one. So
good
being Asian motivated me to get high.
Oh, my
Amazing.
God.
Amazing. I love that.
Right. Now, what did you do when you got high? That's always my favorite question. Because early days of smoking weed, you can't replace those.
Yeah. Freshman year of college, I got so high.
Me too.
And I used to play basketball. That was my favorite.
Dude, me too.
Really? No way.
Oh, man. All right. We're going to have to... Do you still play?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I was in the Comedian Basketball League for a little bit. You were too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we did cross paths that way.
It got too competitive.
Got too busy. Also, they started opening it up to, you know, and I'm glad it expanded, but then there was like an agents team, and then there was like a UCB team. And
every team got like a D1 ringer.
Yeah, dude. The Rick Glassman's team, named the Rick Glassman's, appropriately, because that motherfucker, love you, Rick. You ball hogged, you shot every time. That's why your team struggled. No, I was on not the Comedy Store team, just the Sean Kemp's kids.
Oh, yeah. You guys won, right?
We got to the finals 3 years in a row and lost every time, twice by 1 point at the buzzer.
Wow.
But we had a great squad. But Rick Glassman's with Brent Morin and this guy Willie Mack, who barely did stand-up. But then
he can dunk.
Willie could dunk, yeah.
He's not that tall. He's like 6 feet tall.
Yeah, it was bonkers.
Oh, no, that's not that tall. Yeah, thanks, Jimmy.
Easy.
This is the only podcast where I can't complain being short.
You're welcome. I am an ego boost.
Do you have an Xbox One, an Xbox 360, a PS4, a PS3, a Nintendo Wii, a 3DS, or older systems like a Sega Genesis or Super Nintendo? Well, guess what? You probably love video games and you probably hate leaving your house to go to the store to get them. So sign up for Gamefly at Gamefly.com because that's where you can get all the games delivered right to your mailbox for one low monthly fee. And if you don't like the game, you can fucking send it back because there's no due dates or late fees. Gamefly also lets you rent Blu-ray and DVD movies as a part of their regular service at no extra charge. So to get your free 30-day trial on right now, go to GameFlyOffer.com/ALN and start playing all the great games in the comfort of your own home like a fucking baller. And now back to the episode.
Now you say you love basketball.
I gotta get high and play sometime.
I'm down.
I have to ask you about one credit that I need to know is true.
I know this. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think he's gonna ask?
The Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes,
dude.
Were you a writer / consultant for the Harlem Globetrotters?
I consulted it for a day.
Oh, a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Literally, it was when I first started. It was like the first credit I ever had. That's why it's on there ever since.
Yeah.
I would still go up to that, by the way, if I were you.
Right. You've seen him.
Go up to the song, like, because by the way.
Oh.
Hey, what's up, Irvine Improv? Yeah!
You take the mic, you do some tricks with it, through your legs, all that shit.
That'll be tight. And then rip off my pants. that was, so, Harlem Globetrotters, every year they go tour around the world, and China's one of the biggest stops, right?
Yeah. It's
one of the emerging markets. So the script is very comedic. So they want a Chinese comedian who is from a Chinese descent look over the script and tell them if it's okay, if it's anything offensive.
Okay.
So me being one of the only Chinese American comedians.
Oh my God!
I was the guy they called, but I didn't have an agent. I didn't know how to negotiate. They paid me $200. Met me in LAX. Bought me some food. And that was that.
Dude, that's so Globetrotters.
And then you just looked over it and said, yeah, that's good?
I didn't even read the fucking script.
Well, $200 in food, fuck them, dude. Meet us at LAX at the Marriott Hotel bathroom. Like, what are they?
They sent me a tape. Yeah, it was like in the Marriott, like just a restaurant there, the hotel bar or something.
Dude, that's very shady. Also, like, definitely, I don't know, man, treat you better if you want better results.
Yeah, right. I did tell them one thing. I did watch the video they sent me of last year's China tour, and I'm like, look, you guys have a Hello Kitty mascot thing up there. I just want to tell you, Hello Kitty's Japanese, not Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
And point taken. That was $200. Yeah.
And also that one line where you call one of the Washington Generals a round-eyed gook. That's not good.
That's not going to fly. That's not going to fly.
Because he's not even their best player.
Yeah, he's not.
You could get away with that.
Yeah.
That's
one of the greatest credits ever.
You could have, by the way, just been like, oh yeah, say this.
No, they totally were fucked with
it.
Them.
Sounds like they had no other outlet.
Chinese department. Yeah,
yeah.
So they were like, yo,
just,
kid,
talk how much you love Mao. Mm-hmm. You know, just keep doing that. It's mm-hmm. fine. Call and then refer to a lot of Japanese culture. I've found out because I'm engaged to a Chinese woman.
Mm. Congrats.
Thank you. I thought I'm like typical racist American. I'm like, it's all like similar, right?
Oh no.
If I refer to anything Japanese in the house and like towards her and her family and her culture, it's like that's insanely offensive.
Yeah.
And just and evil. Like I've gotten some stern lectures.
Really?
Yeah. So now I'm a little more sensitive to the Chinese culture for sure.
Yeah, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, like some people get pissed when you mix them up together. I can care less.
So like if someone comes up to you and goes like, what's up with Kim Jong-un? You're like, I don't fucking know, but
it's like that person just looks stupid. Like it's nothing to do with me.
Right.
Right? Like my girlfriend, when I first met her, she didn't know the difference between Korea and Hong Kong, I think.
Oh, okay.
Or she thought they all in China. Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Your girlfriend is not Chinese.
I would hope not. Like that would be very disappointing if she was.
I'd be like if a Jew didn't know what Hanukkah was.
Yeah, she's a white girl from New Jersey.
All right.
So I feel like she's not dumb. She's just like American.
Uninformed.
Yeah,
she's an American. Like, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
She's like those people on jaywalking, you know, back in the day on Jay Leno show. Like they don't know, and that's just an average American educated person. She went to college.
I mean, I would want to fight you on that, but I really can't. It's just
it's the people that they go when Jay's like, so, well, where's British Columbia on the map? And the person would go, well, it's not above us because that's Canada.
It's in London, right?
By the way,
British Columbia.
By the way, I'm quoting that. I use that as a example, but that is a kid I went to high school with that we were filming a video in high school. We're doing trying to get out of doing a project by making a funny video, right? Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're doing some man on the street thing, and his name was Gabe Coyne. And we were like, hey, Gabe. And he was just so and now he's an amazing graphic designer, but he was so beautifully and adorably stupid that we would like, we had one section of this video where it was like, ask Gabe is what the segment was called, and we would ask him questions. We asked him, at one point he just goes, what's Hitler's last name?
Oh my God. Oh, I mean,
so those everyone needs a friend like that. Everyone needs that beautifully dumb friend.
She doesn't sound like she's down that path, but she didn't know enough for you to have to give her a...
She's trying, you know? Like, it's the problem with America is if you're hot since high school, then you're just done. Like, you don't ever try.
Right, because you don't have to.
But then when you get a little older, you realize you're like, fuck, like, the world is more than that.
I need knowledge.
Yeah, the world is more than just going to clubs and looking hot.
Now, I want to know real quick, though, what Jackie Chan's Chinese.
Yes.
Is he, like, to me, I still consider him one of the greatest... I guess just figures in entertainment of all time.
Yeah.
Because those movies, to me, he's like Jim Carrey. Only he can do what he's doing. Oh, there's no other. Jim Carrey in Liar Liar. No other.
Ace Ventura.
Dude, nobody else can do that. Robin Williams, you'd be like, oh, maybe he could, you know, do. I think Robin Williams was supposed to be the Riddler, is what I heard. And then Jim Carrey did it. And I'm like, oh cool. Wow. And that, I feel like there would have been two different versions. But Liar Liar, dude, kicking his own ass in the bathroom, nobody else can do that physically. You know what I'm saying? In Ace Ventura. So Jackie, to me, I feel like it's the same way, where I'm like, those stunts, that shit. Yeah, there's other people, but like,
exactly.
The charisma and the likability as well. So I can't imagine. I mean, was he just, he's a god over there.
Oh yeah.
And did he help you influence you to get into the business?
I mean, we all grew up watching his movies. Yeah. Worldwide, everybody grew up watching Jackie Chan. And he's from Hong Kong. He's a Hong Kong guy.
Oh, wow.
So, of course, we grew up watching him. And, like you said, it's not just the kung fu, right? He brought in the slapstick humor and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Him and Jim Carrey are so good. They go past the corny slapstick physical comedy. Yeah. It transcends that because they're so silly. It passes that.
They truly make it an art form.
Yeah, funny you said Jim Carrey. That was one of my bigger early influence.
Me too.
Like, in Hong Kong, he was big.
Was he?
I watched, like, Ace Ventura, Mask, and all that stuff.
Well, that would make sense, because that comedy was a little more physical.
Universally.
So maybe if the dialogue didn't translate as well, or the timing wasn't right, it's okay. Like, you still see a guy who's doing just ridiculous things with his face, and it's still funny.
It's not dialogue heavy.
Yeah.
It's just funny.
Yeah.
And another guy who's, like, a god in the Hong Kong comedy world, Stephen Chow. The guy that ended up going pretty international, doing Shaolin Soccer, Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah.
So he has a slew of like great. He started his own. He created his own genre in Hong Kong, in Cantonese called Molay Tau. It literally means nonsense. So it's kind of like that Jim Carrey stuff. It's a kind of ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah, because Kung Pao Under the Fist was like, it's just absurd.
Kung Pao. I don't know if that's his movie.
Oh no,
it's Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, Kung Fu
and
Hustle.
Shaolin Soccer.
And
he has a bunch like From Beijing with Love, where he plays this really shitty mainland Chinese 007 agent. It's great. It's just a great, great film.
I love how certain things, and because when I told people I was going to do stand up in China, they were like, well, how's that, like, you're going to a military base? I'm like, no, I'm just going to.
Yeah, did you get a lot of expats or did you get local Chinese?
I got a lot of expats, but I got a lot of locals as well. And it's amazing how humor just translates. Like, funny is funny.
Yeah.
No matter where you're going. Yeah, if you do, like, some deep cut American reference.
Black people got bad credit. Like, what? What is that?
What are some of the worst Chinese stereotypes you've heard that make you go, oh, man, you just don't know shit?
Like, untrue stereotypes?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, give me one of each.
Oh, man.
Once you've heard where you're like, okay, I can't get mad at that. That is racist, but...
Like, Chinese bad drivers, I get it. Like, we're not the greatest driver. Oh, like Koreatown. You go to Koreatown, it's old Korean grandmas. They drive like shit.
Yeah, but there's also old white Jewish grandmas.
Exactly. You go to Beverly Hills, the same thing.
Yeah. I'm the older I get, the more I'm just like, yeah, everyone just sucks.
That's true. That's true.
So some people are against like the self-driving cars. I'm like, no, bring it on.
Yeah.
I want a lot of these people off the road.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I mean, it really would solve a big problem because the amount of people I see in LA driving with their head down.
Oh, texting.
I can't
swerving.
Even. I mean, I'm like, I didn't even, it's crazy that, like, not, like, there should be something in the car. That's going to be the next thing where it's like, fuck flying cars, man. Put a pin in that, okay? We're not getting there.
Yeah.
Because we've joked about it for now, like, 60 years. Like, flying cars, it's not going to happen, man. You're still improving heated seats. We don't fucking care. We don't care how hot our butts get when we're driving. Who was ever in a car like, my butt's too cold?
Yeah.
I mean, fucking put a coat underneath it, you know? But, like, you know, something to where if you look down, your car senses it, and maybe like prints you up a ticket right there or some shit.
Oh,
something. You know what I'm saying? Like something to really
stop people from
scramble
doing
your phone when you're in your car.
Yeah.
Or turn it off for you.
Chuck it in the back.
You know, like
care,
the sensor that they can just maybe feel a sense, like maybe you have to, it feels if your face goes down.
Yeah.
You know, unless.
What if you're just masturbating?
Or trying to suck your own dick?
Yeah.
You're trying to suck your own dick while you're driving. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Because I respect that.
Something tells me that, Jimmy, you've masturbated in your car.
Yeah, I don't ever check my phone, but I got to look down.
Yo, have you ever jerked off in your car?
No, I haven't.
Be honest.
No, I haven't.
We had somebody on the podcast once tell us they did. They pulled over.
I have pulled over and maybe jerked off. I don't know. I can't
That was
confirm.
A hot girl on that billboard.
By the way,
so you had to do it.
Amazing. I've never jerked off in my car, while driving.
I've jerked off in a plane for sure.
Wow.
Good for you.
So, like, that's kind of like the Mile High Club.
the all-time low club. That's the Mile Low Club. It was I was coming back from Hawaii with some comedy buddies, and the whole week I was sharing rooms with buddies.
Yeah,
and I couldn't jerk off.
No privacy.
And I was trying to score, but I couldn't. Like I didn't in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back, there was like this literally like this girl's fucking soccer team in front of us. Fucking hot as shit.
Of course.
And like trying to, you know, they're doing this on purpose, trying to get their bags on the top and like but sticking the ass out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hey man. Hang on, Jason. I gotta go to the bathroom. I gotta just go. Like I can't. I couldn't.
I love that you flat out told your friend, like, "Well, I'm gonna go jerk off."
No, I didn't say that. I'm just like, I gotta. Yeah, come on.
This is too much.
He knew though.
Yeah,
he knew.
I think so.
He knew what you were doing.
That's amazing. That's why dudes are great, man. Because you literally, it's like. You broke it down. You're like, look, I tried. Okay, I was good.
Yeah.
I didn't fucking jerk off around my roommates and my friends because that would have been the wrong thing to do.
Exactly.
So I've earned this. Now, God, you're gonna put me in a position on the flight home with a hot soccer team and a fucking open bathroom.
Come on.
You're not gonna lock the door in that bathroom.
Yeah.
Well, then
and
I'm going
a 6-hour flight back from Hawaii.
How frowned upon is it to jerk off in a bathroom?
I mean,
in a plane. I think as long as you know. Shoot it in the toilet, you're good.
Yeah. Well, what about just in general? You got to go to the stall and fucking, you know, rub one out.
Also, there's a little bit of pressure. I mean, look, there's also an expected wait time with airplane bathrooms because there's only two.
Oh, yeah.
So people understand. Yeah. It's also like if you're taking a little longer, like, dude, I remember waiting, standing in the area right outside the cockpit one time, so much so to where I was like, I feel like I should, like, this is, like, bad that I'm staying here for so. But I was chumming it up with the stewardesses, and this dude was in there for 35 minutes.
Whoa.
Dude.
And literally, he had to have been. And when he came out, I looked at him, and I go, wow. Because I was like, I have to say something. After 15 minutes, fuck it, dude. After 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I get to say something, and you hopefully respond. And he walks out, and I just go, wow. And he goes, I know.
That's
which was his way of being like, yeah, man, you really want to know what was going down in there?
Right, because I'll tell you, you know, if you really push this button.
If I'm in there for 35 minutes, I feel like I would have to do some shitting noises. Even if I'm tricking off, I'll be like,
I mean, those are also jerking off noises.
Yeah,
but okay.
Oh, true.
Dude, it could have been a shit that turned into a jerk. You know what I'm saying? Where he's sitting there pooping, and then he's like, all of a sudden it gets hard because he's like, he starts thinking about that soccer team and he's
right.
He's like, look, I came in here with one game plan, but I'm pulling an audible right now.
Yeah.
Because 35 minutes, like that's, no shit should take that long.
Single stall is a lot of pressure.
Also, if you got turbulence, have you ever tried to shit in a plane while it's shaking, dude?
Oh,
that should be on Fear Factor. It is not an easy.
I feel like that's the safest place you can be with turbulence. Because if it really shakes you up, like have you seen Flight, that Denzel movie?
Oh, yeah.
And then the turbulence, like. The lady wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and then her head got snapped because like she hit the ceiling.
Yeah,
like in a bathroom, it's such a small contained area. You got nowhere to go.
You're good,
so
and there,
you're
and,
safe.
And there's like, and there's like handles on the sides.
Yeah.
I'd rather get thrown around in the fucking seat, like, and tossed around, and for even a minute, just get to fucking fly. You know, if you're in that tiny bathroom, you're just getting squished.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Well, either way, I hope I never find out.
Yeah, true. That being said,
Now you're, in addition to obviously being very funny, you've done a lot of dramatic work too,
dude. Patriots Day, you are so fucking good, man.
Oh, thank you, man.
I was just telling Brad before you got here. I was like, man, it was one of those things where I was like, you know how good comedically you are, but it was like, dude, I mean, home run, dude.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't even know how much dramatic prep you've had, but like, you're that type of role those that type of job is coming your way, I feel like, now so much more.
Yeah, I hope more. Like, I don't mind doing it at all. Like, I don't necessarily have a preference on comedy and drama. Comedy's more fun. That movie is tough to shoot because it's based on real people.
Yeah.
And everybody's very much in character.
Right, and it's such an important dramatic
event. Yeah,
yeah,
we want to do it right.
For
we don't want to just, like, even if you improv some lines, you want to do it within the means of
right.
what the guy said.
Yeah.
Not, you can't just make up some shit. So there's a lot of pressure, but it was, instead of fun, it was like super rewarding.
Did yeah, did, yeah. did the actual, now for those of people who don't know, you played, what was the name of the character?
Danny Mang.
Yeah, and he was, got, is
kidnapped, carjacked and kidnapped by the terrorist, drove him around in real time an hour and a half, and then he escaped, ran away, called the police, and that's how they tracked his Mercedes down. And found a terrorist in Watertown in the Boston Marathon.
I mean, solely responsible.
Yeah, because they were going to go Manhattan next and bomb Times Square.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, what the fuck? And dude, I mean, so did you get personal accounts from this guy?
For sure. He was very open in talking to me. He's also a Chinese immigrant. So we hit it off. You know, I was speaking some Mandarin to him too. So like he was opening up to me that maybe he wouldn't have with some other people. We became really close friends. He's great. And we shot it in Boston, so that's even crazier.
You could you feel even just shooting it, you were
our
like,
fucking hotel, we stayed at the Mandarin on Boston Street,
mm-hmm.
overlooks the finish line of the bombing.
Yeah. I wonder if they did it on purpose.
I wonder, right?
Just like get you guys in that mood, they, like, hey, this is where it was.
Yeah.
Did they take you to all the spots to really just
I made Danny take me to around where he got carjacked by the Cambridge River. And he took me to where he worked and things like that. It's pretty cool to see all that. But at the same time, man, I did feel a lot of pressure. That's why I made sure I did it right and like we all prepared.
Yeah. Now I imagine for a guy like him, that's gotta be maybe difficult to watch the movie, but did he watch the movie?
He did watch the movie. We were all at the premiere together. And
did he
liked it. He approved.
He approved your performance.
I want to know what did he say to you that really resonated as far as like that got you to go, okay, cool, I know how to play this.
Every line that he says is like a chess match. It's life or death. Every question the terrorist asked him, he has to come up with an answer that buys him more time.
Wow.
So it's not just saying answers, right?
Yeah.
Or it's not just telling truthful answers. Sometimes he has to lie just to buy more time.
Yeah.
So one thing he told me in the encounter when the terrorist first carjacked him, the terrorist asked him, is there anybody here that cares about you? Right? It sounds like an innocent question, almost caring.
Right.
So I was like, okay, so this is probably when Danny would tell him, yes, there is. Don't kill me. I have a family.
Right.
Right? But Danny thought better of it. He knew the terrorist asked him that to know that, hey, is there anybody that's going to call the cops?
Right.
If I kidnap you.
Yeah. Yeah.
If so, I might fucking kill your ass.
Oh, wow.
So Danny was smart. So he said, no, there's nobody to care about me here, which is a pretty emotional thing to say, being a fresh immigrant.
Sure,
probably
sure.
There aren't a lot of people that care about him. But he had to give him that answer in order to buy himself some time so he don't die, you know?
Yeah.
And I told Pete Berg about it afterwards. He was like, dude, yeah, let's try that. Put that in the script. And that's in a movie now. And so each answer has a lot of back. Each answer is literally like a story. It's like Slumdog Millionaire, how that movie was cut.
Each
answer he gives is a life story. That's kind of like that for Danny.
That's amazing.
The moment when he breaks away to escape is one of the most intense moments I've seen in a movie.
Yeah, you know
what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and that, I mean, dude, that was, I you must have felt the actual, I mean, I don't even, it seemed very real. So,
thanks. I had nightmares for like a couple days after. It was intense. But I mean, a lot of it is credit to Pete, you know, Peter Berg, the director.
Yeah.
He knows how to get these actions right, get those inserts of the door handle, the terrorist gun, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, let's go, you know, and then how he grabbed him. And how he sprinted, and the movie was spliced together with real footage.
So all the surveillance footage was real.
When I ran out of car, me as the actor running out of the car, it was cut with footage of Danny running across the gas station.
No kidding.
That's amazing. Dude, that's the one thing I was also mentioning to Brad is like seeing how it all came together is fucking bonkers and gives me some faith in like the people that do these things.
The law enforcement, yeah.
Dude, I mean, the way that they, I think it was, 2 days?
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, which seems like not a long time to really go through every step and get every piece of evidence, but the amount of people that were on it and having all the video, cell phones, and they ask for people to send in.
That's right.
I mean, and that whole aspect is pretty terrifying, but also amazing. Did you became friends with Wahlberg?
Kind of. I mean, we don't hang out, but we're acquaintances. We hang at events, I guess, you know.
So cool.
He's great. He's super cool.
So and you're friends with the real life guy. Man, if anyone ever made a movie like about some sort of event that I was involved in and I was kind of like a consultant, I'd be like, oh no, this is when I showed the terrorist my dick and they complimented it and said how big it was.
Huge.
So like, huge. It's a very key part of the film.
Yeah, and then it told his wife to come. He's like, yo, look at this guy's dick. It's the biggest I've ever seen.
You know, and that's really, it's really important to the story. So Peter Berg, make sure you put in the part where the terrorist compliment my dick.
Exactly. And then that's when I disarmed him and put him in a chokehold and called the cops.
Right.
And with my dick.
Yeah, with
I
my dick.
I choked him with my dick.
It was so big. Yeah. I just totally wrapped it around him. Went in, so I choked him out while having sex with this random Victoria's Secret model that was just walking back. They were just so impressed by the size of my dick.
Exactly. And the cops came, and they were so surprised by how big my dick was. And they didn't put that in the police report.
So really, I got a medal, and my dick also got a medal. Like, it was insane. It was like the scene from Star Wars where it was like Han next to Chewie. It was nuts.
I think the great thing about Danny is he really didn't want to be famous. He was, the red carpet made him very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's telling the truth. And like, you know, he wanted to share his story as part of a bigger story, you know.
How thrown are people when they see you now do stand up after that movie?
I don't know if people put it in two and two together. Even from my character in Jing Yang to doing stand up, he was like, holy shit, I didn't know he spoke English. Which, I mean, I guess I can take as a compliment.
Did he learn it for the show?
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah.
Which it is amazing that even in today's world where we have, where it's obvious that people are actors and people can play any random characters, it is amazing that people just kind of look at you like, oh wow, you speak English. It's like acting.
Exactly.
It's pretty crazy.
But some people are just ignorant. I mean, I did a show in like the Ventura Harbor Club, which is not the most sophisticated people. This was, I don't know, 5 years ago before any of this, right? And obviously I'm just doing my set as me speaking English.
Yeah.
And this lady, like in her 40s or 50s, came up and was like, oh man, that's so cool, like you don't even speak like the other Asians, man. And I was just like, oh okay.
The other Asians.
That's that. Yeah, you know, that's another one of those things. Like I said earlier, it's not. She's just ignorant. She just comes off looking stupid.
Yeah,
I can't get mad about it.
At some point, you have to just brush it off and go, you know,
it's more material for me. It's fine. Yeah.
And according to your IMDb page,
yes, sir.
You got a movie coming out with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah,
Life of the Party. Now, when does this come out? Do we know yet?
We shot it last year already. Okay. It's coming out May 2018, so it's going to be a while.
Oh, wow. So they're really holding on to that.
Yeah, I think it's just New Line releases one comedy a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But from the screenings that I haven't seen it, from other people that saw it, they say it's really good.
Of course.
Yeah, Melissa, I mean, you know her.
Yeah.
She's the nicest people. Me and Adam was hanging out her Christmas after... Christmas party.
Yeah.
Christina Aguilera. Andy Garcia.
Bette Midler.
Oh my God.
Barbara Streisand.
Babs.
Babs. That's what I call her now. We're friends. Dude, we text.
There was a moment when I went up to, I texted my mom and I go, Bette Midler is here. And Barbara Streisand just walked in and she just was like, kill me now. and she was like, try to get a picture. I was like, I can't. I'm not even supposed to be texting.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to Bette Midler at the appetizer thing. And then at one point, I befriended. She leaves, and so her husband's standing there. So I start chumming him up.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, he's like a dude just flying solo right now. Like, let me just dude out with him. And so, and then we shoot the shit, whatever. And then at one point, I was telling him about the whiskey room. You know how it was like that side room next to the pool that had like.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a great room.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like, that's like a whiskey room. And so Bette walks around at one point, and she's trying to show somebody else, and she goes, Adam, she goes, you look like you know where the whiskey room is. She goes, can you take me there? I go, yes, Bette Midler.
Yeah.
Follow me.
Yeah. The whole time in that, the whole goal in that party for us was just to not freak out.
Yeah.
Really.
I would imagine so. When you're around that many celebrities and you're not hanging out with YouTube stars or the Cash Me Outside girl.
Right,
you're hanging out with Bette Midler,
like A-list.
And Andy Garcia.
Legends.
And
not just A-list, but legends.
And you and I love that we both stuck around till the very end.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I left when you were still there, but it was one of maybe six people.
We were dancing with Christina Aguilera.
Dude, at the end it was Christina Aguilera, Michael McDonald, Melissa, and Ben on the dance floor.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is some weird fucking NyQuil dream.
I got pretty fucking wasted.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Just so I can cope with how famous everyone is.
Yeah. But again, could not be nicer people and more generous, and they love you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're great. They love you, too, man. Like, when we're shooting the movie in Atlanta, they mentioned you.
Oh, nice.
I think you sent them, like, some animation or something.
Oh, yeah.
They were looking at that. Oh, yeah, cool. It was cool. Yeah.
That's so cool.
What do you have stories from Silicon Valley that you're like...
Oh, a helicopter's
coming. I thought it was an earthquake for a minute.
Oh, jeez.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, no, because I grew up here, so unless it's over a five, I don't give a shit.
Oh, really? But didn't you feel the vibrate? Didn't it feel...
Yeah. I felt it, but I was like, nah.
That was just helicopter, right?
That's like a two. I'm good.
I wonder if that's how the song Feel the Vibration by Marky Mark started. Where he was doing a podcast, and he felt almost earthquake, and he goes, did you guys feel the vibration?
One thing...
And somebody goes, wait.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. Come on.
Yeah.
Feel it. He goes, what are you doing? He goes, I'm adding on to your sentence, man. I think if we put a track behind that.
One of like his entourage guys or something told me like early on, he's like, just don't call Marky Mark. Like that's, you know.
Yeah, it's...
But I get it. Like why?
Sure. There's a clip of... I don't know if you were ever... Yeah, this was out by the time you got to America. Toll Request Live, TRL. Carson Daly.
Oh, yeah, Carson Daly, yeah.
There's a clip of Eminem standing next to Mark Wahlberg where Eminem just keeps bringing up Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch songs.
Oh, no.
And, like, he's doing it, but, like, not saying Marky Mark. He's like, yeah, it comes back from commercial. It's like, hey, I'm Carson Daly. I'm here with Mark Wahlberg and Eminem. And Eminem goes, yep, we're just all here together, just one big Funky Bunch.
Uh-huh,
and you just see... Wahlberg like start to go like, all right, dude, you're about 2 seconds away from me hitting you.
Wow. He would fucking hit a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I look at that guy and
I would
go,
take
he's intense.
Mark Wahlberg over Eminem in a fight.
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
probably most dudes.
Yeah. I take
Eminem.
I think The Rock
is like at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
Right?
Mark Wahlberg might have more scrap though.
You're right, dude.
Yeah. Because he's a street guy.
He's from the streets of Boston, you know?
Boston.
And The Rock's from what? The streets of Pasadena?
yeah, something like
Miami.
That.
Miami.
Is all it right. Miami? Also, that's not bad.
He's probably a Miami guy.
I mean, also, he probably, like, getting into wrestling, like, he probably had to have had actual fights in his life, right?
Yeah.
Something feels that to
or,
go,
or
oh, I can do
so
this.
He's so jacked, nobody ever fucked
well,
him.
Well, he played college football for the U. So, yeah, he's had.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
What a life. He might be. Dude, this Dos Equis motherfucker, he is not. Why don't they replace him with the most interesting man in the world?
Yeah, just The Rock.
Yeah.
I just want to hear, like, between.
Even Don Cheadle I would take over the fucking Dos Equis.
That new guy sucks.
Dude, he's the worst, and he's not even attractive.
He looks like a rat. Yeah, he looks like a rat. Dude, radish guy. Yeah.
The most interesting man, and maybe that's why it's not... I'm the most attractive man in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's like, look, ladies, I might have a tiny penis and I look like Splinter's brother.
Yeah.
But I'm very interesting.
Yeah.
I fucking do all this weird shit that the commercial
it's
says.
More relatable.
Right.
It's more relatable.
At least with the older guy, you're like, yeah, I could see how he was... like attractive dude back in the day, or he has all this experience.
He got swag.
He's got
Dos Equis really should take a tip here, because it's like he beat a man playing chess with his arms tied behind his back, and he's like, "Stay thirsty, my friends." But if they really did it right, it would be like, you know, he fucked six women, took a break, and then fucked another 12. And it's like, he is the most fuckable man in the world.
Yeah, be like, wow, I got to drink some Dos Equis.
I got to drink some Dos Equis.
Yeah, everything is just sex. Like, if you really want to talk about a most interesting man, you know?
he
fucked six supermodels while his wife is watching, and she sucked his dick after. That's the guy I want.
Like, damn it, I got to get some damn Dos Equis.
He fucked the girl in a Marriott restaurant lounge while he was consulting on the Globetrotters, then fucked the whole soccer team on the way back from Hawaii 4 hours later.
And still jerked off in the bathroom.
Jimmy O. Yang.
Still jerked off
the most interesting man in the world.
Wait, but so do you have people that have come out of the woodworks from either high school or college once you've gone to Silicon Valley that are just like blowing you up and either being flattering or being weird?
Pretty nice. Nobody. Yeah. I went to Beverly Hills High School. Everybody's pretty rich to some degree.
Yeah.
There's some people that send me a Facebook message every now and then, but it's all very nice. Nobody's like trying to rub off of me, get rich off of me, because I'm not even rich, you know? So it's, I don't think I'm there yet.
I did see you pocketing some of those gummy bears for like dinner later.
Yeah.
Do you have story? We're both big Silicon Valley fans. I'm sure a lot of people listening are. Are there any just I don't know fun stories from the set? Like how
that set just seems like it's just improvising all day. And
it
not,
is.
Not
I mean, there's a
time.
Lot of. I think this is why they kept me around too. Like the first day I went on there. I don't know if you guys remember, it's episode 3, season 1.
Okay.
Where I just answered the door, like, this is Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was it. And then I think that's the line. And then everybody starts saying their name to this old man.
Mm-hmm.
The joke is they say somebody else's name so they don't know it's them. But then I just chimed. I just took a chance, you know. So I just chimed in and started saying my name because I'm a confused foreigner.
Yeah.
So it kind of added to the joke. It's like literally like four or five jokes in one thing.
Oh,
and they liked that, you know. So and then and I kept improvising and then and then, you know, it just led to some other stuff.
Love it.
And
that's a, by the way, let's, that's a good lesson for people that, you know,
take a chance.
You have
dude.
To, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
You gotta be a boss, man. Not like be an idiot or be an asshole.
Sure.
Now I'm confident enough to be very, not demanding, but just know what I want. Like I'll go up to props guy. I'm like, hey, give me a, like I was just shooting this movie where I'm playing this like rich asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh my god, that's a great, I mean, I can't wait
to see
you.
I'll show you guys
part.
Some picture okay, off good. Air. Not love that it. People can see this anyway.
But, wait till the audio is not recording to show the picture.
It's called Crazy Rich Asian, so we're shooting that right now. And this guy's like a billionaire, asshole, playboy guy. So I told the props guy, because one of the scenes, I get out of the car, I'm an asshole, and I slap this girl on the ass, right? So I just told the props guy, I'm like, hey, can you give me some like Singapore dollars? I want to do one where I just try and throw the money at the girl's face.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and I told her, I'm like, okay, let's do it. Let's try it. And then I think that turned out to be pretty good. Whereas we keep it or not, I don't know. But you got to kind of, you know, I always say this. I always just shoot the threes. You know, I miss a lot, but that's a good thing about movies. You can miss,
right.
But you just need that one good take. You took that chance
yeah,
on.
Yeah, man.
You're the Ron Artest of comedy. You just keep shooting threes.
I am the Ron Artest.
You're just like, one of these will go in eventually.
Yeah, but I learned a lot of that from TJ, man. He just... It's not just improv. Me and him would talk about ideas, mm-hmm. even within the scene. Let's do this. Like this year, I don't know if this is, I think it's probably like episode 7 or something.
Okay.
There's a scene where like we just go into an office and we open a door. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning of the scene. And you know, opening the door is very easy. Camera's on the other side. You just open the door. But we're like, let's make this interesting. How would Jing Yang and Erlich, because they kind of hate each other, open the doors? Mm-hmm. So he's like, let me open the door for you. And then I'll do this joke like ladies first because he's kind of an asshole. He always does that.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's do that. But then I just ignore you and then I'll open the other side of the door and it becomes like a stalemate of us like who's going to go in. So we did a bunch of different gags of just the door.
Right.
You know?
And just something as simple as opening the door. Just
And
just taking those chances.
Exactly. And it adds to it. It adds a dimension to it. And it's hard to... The writing is so good, but
oh
if
God.
You can still add something, I learned a lot of that from TJ, man.
And just it's an ensemble cast. There's not like, I guess you could say Richard is the main character, mm-hmm. but everyone between Zach Woods, who's just
amazing,
so funny, and just such a, and of course Kumail, and like it just seems like a cast where no one is really trying to be the star. They're just trying to make a good product.
Yeah, nobody's trying to one up each other. We all have our own space, and the writing is so good that we all have our own thing going. You know,
and right now your thing is the hot dog app.
Yeah, the hot dog thing.
So go download the damn app, take some pictures
not
of things, and it'll tell you if it's a hot dog or not.
Yeah, tweet me and then hashtag not hot dog at funny Asian. No, seriously, we're trending on the fucking app store. That's incredible,
oh my God.
Man.
Right.
Yeah, and it came out, 2 days ago, and we got 300 reviews already.
Wow.
I mean,
are they all positive?
Yeah, because it's all just fans of the show. Like,
the fans are pretty diehard, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. Especially when you do something that's of the show, but it actually works, because it's actually a lot of techies watching the show.
Oh, and from friends that I know that work in the tech industry, they love the show because I don't know who your consultants are or who your writers are, but they're throwing in such authentic inside jokes.
It'll
be people making fun of LinkedIn or the Silicon Valley parties that's nerds that have like huge stars performing that where they're like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We're just doing this because this is what we think is cool.
Right.
But we're not actually into it. Like I think in episode one, like Kid Rock is performing.
Yeah. In the very beginning, that was the opening.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's great. Like we did so much research, and Mike is a fucking genius, Mike Judge.
Yeah.
So he knows in order to do a show like this and do it properly, you have to do it right. You have to get the consultants and not just do like a Hollywood version of it, because then people hate it.
Right.
And we got crazy great consultants that are actually really successful tech guys, and they just do the show for a hobby. Dick Costello, the CEO and one of the creators of Twitter, was our consultant last year, 2 years
Whoa.
Ago.
Jeez.
Yeah, and the person that built the app, Tim Englade and Todd, and our other consultant, consulting producer, Jonathan Dalton, they built the app. And these guys could be making millions doing other stuff. And they do in the off seasons, because they're fucking geniuses.
I love how they're just like, they make millions on their own time.
Yeah.
And then they just come have fun with us.
And they've made millions, I'm sure.
Well,
and
I mean, the guy from Twitter is probably a billionaire.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. And now they're just like, eh, well, you know, I like this show. Let's walk out.
Did you ever try to pitch him an app on the side?
I did. It didn't work.
What was your app? Or do you remember
was,
it?
Like a timer for trying to jerk off on the plane bathroom?
Yes.
It's been 15 minutes. Get back to your seat. They're getting suspicious.
One of my dreams to go on Shark Tank, you know.
Oh,
I
man.
I was pitching HBO. I was like, dude, how about me and TJ go on Shark Tank character and pitch our app? But then Shark Tank wasn't in season when we were shooting, make sense.
It's a great idea, though.
But I did pitch him Jonathan an app like a couple years ago. He didn't say no, but he was just like, go do more research, see what's up, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It was something like parking, a Google Maps for parking to see how much parking is in the neighborhood or something.
Great idea.
Something like that. I forget what it was. But I think there's something similar out there. It's just not done very well.
Gotcha.
And to do something, I mean, you just got to spend so much money because I don't code or anything.
Right. Yeah, my brief time up in San Francisco. Like, everyone up there knows how to code.
Everyone.
It's insane.
If you know how to code, you can make a ton of money.
Yeah.
Really?
They get to a point where, like, these guys, it's like Hollywood. They're like artists. They don't want to go work for Google. Google are, like, begging for these guys to work for them. Or, like, all these big companies, right? Mm-hmm. But these guys are such geniuses. They know they can make millions just doing whatever. It's like, have you met a guy that's, like, an amazing singer or something? Or
Daughtry, yeah. I met Daughtry outside the Laugh Factory once.
And we've had Johnny Resnick, lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls, on this podcast.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, just amazing geniuses, businessmen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they know they can make millions, but they just want to do what they love. So they don't really care.
Fuck.
You know?
But they also make millions.
Yeah. They've made their millions.
They've made their millions.
And then they're like, fuck it.
Do I need more millions?
Yeah. And then, exactly. And then they still want to do it. I mean, so you got... Now, is there plans for more stand-up stuff? Are you going to start doing the road?
I've actually taken a break from stand-up as of like 3 months ago. Because stand-up, as you guys know, you guys are like on top of your game. It's a full-time commitment, right?
Yep.
You got to think in a certain way, write down your bits, write on those bits, work on those bits at the club every night. And I don't necessarily want to spend all my mental energy on that. I'm writing a couple of things. I got this book I'm writing that should come out next spring.
Awesome.
So I got to turn that in by October.
Okay.
I got a couple scripts I want to write, and then with the movie and TV stuff. So that's keeping me pretty busy.
Dude, I love that you're... I was just talking with somebody about this the other day, trying to take my own advice about not spreading yourself too thin and prioritizing. And it's like... And you can't... Saying no to stuff, you're saying yes to it subsequently. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
By freeing yourself up to put all your mental energy towards stuff that you're really passionate about. And
exactly.
Stand-up is a certain grind that does take a lot out of you. And so
a lot.
There's a lot that you're gaining by...
And the reward is not necessarily that great when you are doing, say, movies or TV shows. Like, I think it gets you there. And I wouldn't be any of this without stand-up.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's always going to be a part of you.
Exactly.
If at one point, once the show is done, hopefully in 10 years, you guys want to do like a Silicon Valley tour, even in the off season, you guys can totally do that.
For sure. I think our schedule is great. We shoot from October to February. So in between,
so great.
We can go do whatever. Shoot movies, write stuff, or go on tour. I did a good amount of road dates last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not my life, man. Some people enjoy the road,
mm-hmm.
like even not for the money or whatever. They just like it. They like to go get laid, go smoke, go drink.
I mean, have you tried jerking off in every flight? Like,
I think I've jerked off in every comedy condo. But so has every comedian.
Yeah, so has every comedian. If you, that's a nightmare.
I would suggest bring your own sheets. Yeah.
If you haven't seen Jimmy and Patriot's Day, I highly recommend it. Silicon Valley, I mean,
and download the Not Hot Dog app.
I'm gonna get that shit.
Be ready for Life of the Party, which will come out next year.
Uh-huh.
And follow him on Instagram because you literally just got back from Malaysia like a few days ago.
That's for the Crazy Rich Asians.
Crazy Rich Asians.
So hopefully that comes out. Maybe that comes out around the same time as the Melissa movie next year.
And then
that'll be a good year.
Yeah,
and then next year around this time, you won't even know who we are.
Guys. If you guys provide the gummy bear, I'll be here.
Get out, everybody.
Help you get through. listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or AboutLastNightPodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.